The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday.
Live
in the Israel Update with Anthony Wright, only on High FM.
Anthony Wright, a very good morning. How are you?
Booker Tov, good, thank you, Howard. How are you guys doing today?
Excellent, thank you. I don't know if you heard that last report. We were talking about a report that has been released, it's now, in terms of cost of living, comparatively around the world, and it lists Tel Aviv as the 9th most expensive city in the world to live in. In 2017, it was the 11th most expensive city. It's now gone to number 9.
I did actually hear, and I've seen these reports, and it's an interesting thing that you know, when you analyze what contributes to the Israeli cost of living, as you know, there were a lot of we spoke about the fact that there were a lot of protests towards the end of last year about increases in the cost of electricity and increases in various other commodity items, foodstuffs and things like that, where prices were due to increase. Having been through quite an extended period of zero or negative inflation. So on an inflationary point of view, Israel doesn't really suffer like price increases as dramatically as you find in many other countries. So the question is, what contributes to this very, very high cost of living? I think two factors really are the ones that we need to think about. The first of which is housing. Mm-hmm. The cost of housing is just phenomenal. To rent or to buy a really, really small apartment in Tel Aviv costs a very, very a large sum of money. You know, just a basic apartment, the most basic apartment that one could buy, maybe one or two bedrooms, would be costing you, you know, no less than 1 million shekels for sure. You can get very, very little or nothing for 1 million shekels. Mm. You're really talking about 1.5 to 2 million shekels. You can do the sums. I think it's 4 to 1 against the rand. Mm. So you're paying like, you know, between 4 and 6 million rand or the equivalent of that just to buy the most
basic.
The most basic, basic apartment, nothing fancy, really nothing fancy, not in the best area, probably on the second or third or fourth floor of a building, maybe even without an elevator, you know, old building that needs renovating. That's the kind of thing that you're going to get for that sort of money. I think the other factor which has contributed towards Tel Aviv moving up the list is the strength of the shekel.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah, the shekel has really been strong. And while that points to good things in our economy, it also means that from an export point of view, things are more expensive for people to buy abroad, Israeli produce, Israeli services. And, of course, it also means that we kind of climb up that list of how expensive it is to live in Tel Aviv. One shouldn't underestimate the cost of living in Israel. It's very, very high indeed. And I know that people who've been here on holidays and things like that have also felt it, you know, when you come just to buy a meal or to get into a taxi or something like that is exorbitantly expensive when compared to, you know, what you would expect to pay in your home country.
Absolutely. The Israeli High Court has given the state an extension of 6 months, and that's to enact a new law to deal with the recruitment of Haredi, of the Haredi youth in the IDF. Tell us about this. What's the basis for this extension?
This is just an ongoing issue that's really been dogging the state of Israel effectively since 1948, since the establishment of the state,
right,
when the Prime Minister Ben Gurion decided that he would exempt certain Haredi students who are studying in the yeshivot from serving in the army. And at that stage, the number of people who were affected by this exemption was really, really small. These days, the number of people affected by the exemption turns into many, many thousands and even tens of thousands of people. And this is really a source of major friction within our society, where people who send their children to the army and those children who go to the army, boys and girls, feel that the Haredi community are getting it off lightly by being exempt from serving in the army, even though they might be studying in yeshivot. Many of them don't even study in yeshivot, but still somehow manage to extract an exemption. So this is a really a source of major friction in our society. And the High Court has decided that exempting yeshiva students from studying in the from serving in the army is discriminatory. That's what the High Court has decided, that this is not an okay practice anymore. And the High Court has demanded on a number of different occasions in the past that the government enact some law which will allow Haredi students over a period of time to become part of the IDF. Now, we do know that the IDF already has Haredi groups, Haredi units that serve in the army, where the army really accommodates all of their needs from the point of view of dress code to studying during the time of their service, to special food requirements that they might demand, to various times that they might need for prayer or for any other practices which are common within their community. So the IDF has really gone out of its way to try to accommodate Haredi students. It's not simple for the IDF to accommodate all different types of factions and all different types of groups. It costs money, it takes time and energy, and there are people within the IDF who feel that it's probably better for the Haredi not to serve in the army, because it means then that the army is not forced to accommodate them. But overall, I think that from our society point of view, getting the Haredi to serve in the army, just the same as everybody else is required to do by law, is an important point. And I think it is required and it is important that we somehow accommodate them in the army. And the High Court originally had given the state until December. Well, actually, originally it was September of 2018 as one of a number of deadlines that the High Court had laid down for the government to enact a law to accommodate this. The government missed that law, as they did the extension that was granted until December and even until January of this year. Those extensions have all been missed. And now the court has decided that a further 6 months is relevant, is appropriate, because this could potentially bring major friction and major upheaval in our society as we head into this election period. And I think that the High Court has made a sensible decision to give another 6 month extension to this issue. We saw already that when the last extension that was granted was coming up for expiry and the government hadn't managed to get the law through, that the Haredi were already being mobilized to demonstrate across the country, because there was a fear that as a result of the extension expiring, that the IDF would begin to arrest people who didn't turn up for military services within the Haredi community, and this was giving rise to protests and mobilization of forces within that community, and that was potentially going to be very, very, very negative for our society in terms of creating further civil upheaval that we could really do without. So now that the government has the High Court has decided that another 6 months is relevant, I don't see this being resolved within 6 months, bearing in mind that that will just be immediately after our election and after potentially a new government has been sworn in. I don't think that this gives them enough time really to deal with what is a very, very, very problematic and prickly issue. So I expect that there will be another extension granted, but at some point in the near future, this issue is going to need to be confronted by a serving government, come to an agreement with whoever the major Haredi factions are, and ultimately enact a program whereby over a period of time, Haredi youth will be recruited to the IDF. And I look forward to seeing that moment.
Anthony, isn't the problem or the challenge here that coming up towards an election, this is really going to become a central issue in terms of coalition governments? And we know that Israel always needs a coalition government in order to establish a ruling party in some way, which means that a side deal will be done between the ultra-Orthodox parties and whomever has the ability to rule. So ultimately what happens is this just gets pushed out and pushed out and pushed out. I mean, am I misunderstanding this?
Not at all. I think that the critical question is going to be whether the ultra-Orthodox factions will form part of the ruling coalition after the election or not.
Right.
All indications right now show that they probably will form part of the new coalition, because when we look at the lie of the political land at the moment, it seems difficult for me to envisage anybody other than the Likud being called upon to form the government.
As it has been for the last number of governments, it's generally been.
As it has been for the last number of governments, although we do recall not too long ago that there was a government put together without the ultra-Orthodox factions being included. And in fact, that was when major progress was made towards enacting a law. Unfortunately, that progress was then reversed and undone. the moment the ultra-Orthodox factions did form part of the next coalition. So I think the critical question is going to be, will the ultra-Orthodox faction form part of the next coalition government? Seems like they will. If that is the case, then there is absolutely no doubt that in order to form part of that government, they will absolutely demand that this issue is part of the coalition agreement. And so I suspect that they will demand that the government agrees not to recruit Haredi youth to the IDF during the term of the next government. I think that that will almost certainly be the demand. So it's going to be interesting to see how this circle is squared, given the background of the High Court ruling, where the High Court has decided that this is discriminatory practice and not acceptable for Israeli society. There is potentially a conflict that's going to arise between the coalition agreement and the High Court.
Well, Anne Fine says many of the so-called yeshiva boys are not yeshiva material. They must go to the army. Moving on to another subject, Anthony, the Ilan and Asaf Ramon Airport in Eilat was opened. It's very interesting, and it was over December, I believe, that Ilan Ramon's wife passed away. What a tragic, tragic story and tragic life this family has led, as well as achieving so much.
Absolutely. I mean, we do recall Rona Ramon and the fact that she passed away also at a very young age, tragically, from an illness. And now, just only a few months later, the airport bearing the name of her husband and her son is formally opened, as it was yesterday, for international business, for daily activities. The anniversary of that space shuttle disaster is only just a few weeks away. The 1st of February was the day upon which that space shuttle exploded with Ilan Ramon on board as it re-entered the Earth's atmosphere. And traditionally, the 1st of February has been a day where the Israeli Space Society puts on programs to encourage Israeli youth to participate in space exploration and interest in space activities in general, in memory of Ilan Ramon, who was, of course, Israel's first astronaut, going up in the space shuttle, as he did. But now the new airport has been opened in Eilat, and there are questions about how this kind of fits into the overall lie of the land, where airports in Israel are concerned, and particularly in the Eilat area, because there are already two airports in the Eilat area. And the question is, you know, how many airports can this area really support? So the one airport, the busiest airport in Eilat, and the one that really serves the city of Eilat, for those people who've been there, will know that the airport is almost in the middle of the city, almost in the middle of town. You could literally come out of the airport and walk to your hotel from the airport, which is one of the most unusual situations I've ever come across, and I haven't seen anything like it anywhere else in the world. I mean, people don't even need to use a taxi to get to and from the airport, or a car or any vehicle of any sort. You can literally just walk to your hotel. You can walk to the nearest shopping center. It's really part of the city. But it also presents certain risks and dangers with airplanes approaching into that built-up area. And so it has been decided that that airport really needs to be closed down. That's obviously become prime property in the city of Eilat. And that will no doubt be redeveloped for good use for city center activities. And so really the Ramon Airport is designed to replace that airport over time as activities of that airport have ceased, and it is used for other activities. The Ramon Airport will be used. And, of course, the other airport, which is in the area of Eilat, is really just a military airport. And even though it has been used for commercial traffic, this airport is much, much further away from the city than the Ramon Airport, which is, I think, something like 10 or 20 kilometers away from the city of Eilat. And so I think that the idea is that the military airport will return back to military use. The Eilat City Airport will be closed down ultimately, and Ilan and Asaf Ramon Airport will really take over from those airports in terms of commercial traffic. And let's not forget that the idea is also that this airport will serve our neighboring countries, who are not lying too far away from Eilat at all. Cities like Aqaba in Jordan and perhaps Taba in Egypt will potentially also benefit from this airport, because the idea is that traffic going to those cities will also use the Ramon Airport for their takeoffs and landings. So hopefully this will promote some sort of regional development, and not only try to help the city of Eilat, which really does need as much economic help as it can get.
All right, and just a comment, Challenger Disaster Anniversary, 28th of January, not a not the 1st of February. All right, time is 8 o'clock. That's Anthony Reich with the Israel Report. Anthony, we look forward to catching up with you tomorrow.